Sunday, it's the Rams and the Bills to start things off as one of the first games of the day. They're both 2-0 with Jared Goff and the Rams finding some of that 2018 magic with their most recent win, a blowout one over Philly, while Josh Allen has the Bills crushing their competition with a league-leading 729 yards passing, 6 touchdowns, and no interceptions to start the season. Max, it's Rams, it's Bills. Who you got and why?
The Bills are the slight favorites, and I got the Rams in what would be considered a mild upset. First of all, the Bills are at home, and they're given 2.5 points. Now, home field usually means 3 points. Maybe the odds makers have changed that to 2.5 because it doesn't mean what it used to mean. But at any rate, the odds reflect the fact that this is anyone's game. Mm-hmm. I like the Rams. I think what's interesting about this team is Jared Goff without Todd Gurley looked lost last year. He had really regressed. And that class of quarterback, Jared Goff, Carson Wentz, and Dak Prescott, the question is who's the best among them, right? Well, Carson Wentz got off to a very hot start in his career. Okay, it's Carson Wentz. He's just more talented than the other guys, right? But then he got banged up a little bit, and then Jared Goff took off. And 2/3 of the way through that season, he looked like an MVP candidate. Then he cooled down, and Dak Prescott, meanwhile, you look, you go, boy, this guy's just putting up numbers, solid, not missing games year after year. Maybe it's Dak Prescott. It's still unclear who's the best out of those three quarterbacks. I'll tell you this, though. Jared Goff doesn't have Todd Gurley this year. He has a running back by committee. It doesn't seem to be hurting him. He's got, you know, Kupp and Wood, and he's spreading the ball around his tight end. Jared Goff, it is unclear. Like, who's the best? At this moment, if you had to say who's the best, I would say Dak is the best. But I wouldn't take that to the bank. I don't know that he's going to wind up as considered a better quarterback than Jared Goff. Out of the three of those guys, one dude has been in the Super Bowl. Super Bowl. He's already been there. And by the way, it was the lowest scoring game in Super Bowl history. Goff looked overmatched. It was against Bill Belichick and an all-time great defense. And it's not like Tom Brady lit the world on fire that game either. The entire game was the lowest score ever. This Rams team, for the, third consecutive year, has a chance to start 3-0. McVay is showing so far that year one was not a parlor trick, and then the league just figured him out. He's got more tricks up his sleeve. Goff looks really good. The defense looks good when it needs to. I like the Rams in a tight game.
Believe it or not, I'm going to go with the Buffalo Bills in this particular situation, knowing that Aaron Donald will have an opportunity to get at a Josh Allen who's completing 70% of his passes with 6 touchdowns and not a single interception thus far this year. I've been impressed with what I've seen from the Rams. We can't ignore Cam Akers. This is why they was willing to let go of Todd Gurley. This guy, Cam Akers, all right, he can ball. And Malcolm Brown. He's their leading rusher. He's been running the ball effectively for them in the first 2 games or so, okay? And obviously, we can't ignore what we're seeing. I understand that. We can't ignore what we've been seeing from Jared Goff either, and I get it. You still got the receivers that you got. But I'm looking at Josh Allen, and I'm like, Stephon Diggs was a big pickup for them this offseason. Yeah. He's their leading receiver. They got John Brown there, okay? You got Cole Beasley. They've got the number one passing attack in the National Football League. Now, some would say that's why they're going to lose, because you're going to go back and you're going to throw the football, and that's going to give Aaron Donald more of an opportunity to get at Josh Allen. I understand that. But I look at the way that the Buffalo Bills have been playing. They're stout against the run. The Rams have been effective thus far because they've got a top 3 rushing attack. I think in the end, being in Buffalo with Josh Allen playing the way that he's been playing, with them having some semblance of a passing attack, and I still believe in their secondary, even though they're 21st against the pass right now, I think as the season progresses, they'll get even better and better and better. I just think this is one of those situations where the Buffalo Bills show us that they're a bit more real than fraudulent. I think they show up. I think it's going to be a tight game, but I think somehow, some way, since this game's going to be in Buffalo instead of Southern California, although it's not that cold as of yet, I think this is right for the Buffalo Bills to win this.
By the way, you mentioned
game.
all the running backs except for Darrell Henderson. Yep. Fantasy players know you go with Darrell Henderson this week because the other two guys are banged up. But that running back by committee so far has worked just fine.
All right, well, you talk about home field advantage, but did you know that the Rams are tied for the best record on the road since Sean McVay took over as head coach?
Yeah, 18-7?
Okay.
Was it good enough for them to get to the playoffs last year?
No, it was not.
Thank you very much.
All right.
Brutal division.
Brought to you by the Capital One Venture Card. Earn unlimited double miles on every purchase every day, and you can use those miles on any travel purchase. Plus, earn unlimited 5x miles on hotels and rental cars booked through Capital One Travel. Your next trip is closer than you think with the Venture Card from Capital One. Terms apply. See CapitalOne.com for details.
The Heat one game away from making their first finals appearance since 2014. The Celtics really trying to hold on tight. These two teams playing at 8:30 on ESPN. Kendrick Perkins here with us, former Celtic champion. And Stephen A., I want to say one thing. I heard the conversation yesterday about this series in the finals being in L.A. and also Miami, and no one is going to be there. Two of the greatest cities in the country, no one will be there. Very tragic.
Let me ask you this question. You are subbing for Molly, are you not?
I am.
You want to continue to sub for Molly, don't you?
Are
you bringing
the bear?
That's just a stab, Charlie.
Well, listen, I was listening yesterday, and I didn't even think about it until it was brought up yesterday, and I was like, oh, my goodness, you're right.
Who does that? We're here in New York, and we get ready to bring Kendrick Perkins on, and you bring up the fact that you remind us that we're going to miss out on L.A. and Miami.
Charlie, when you pray to the basketball gods, you have to be very specific. He's been praying to the basketball gods for L.A. Miami finals for years.
Praying.
And you got it.
Charlie, do you understand?
You have to be specific.
Max is not exaggerating. I have prayed for 20 years for Miami and L.A. to be in an NBA finals against one another. Well, 20 years.
Your prayers are answered.
At least we got the Super Bowl in Miami right before things really went crazy.
Prayers are answered.
Stephen A., talking about tonight, who's
Charlie,
winning?
Charlie.
Yeah, KP,
Charlie,
what's up?
Before you get started, I know it's HBCU week, and look, I'm all in for it. I love this week. I think it's historical. But Stephen A., you get you a suit made, okay? Don't come on here looking like a boxing trainer, all right? Get you a suit made when you come on for First Take in the morning. I just wanted to address you like the numbers on the house.
Man, you know, Kendrick Perkins, I might be the only person on television that ain't scared of you, man. I ain't scared of you, Kendrick Perkins. I'm not scared of you. No matter how evil you be looking.
Talking about something.
Listen, I'm the brand ambassador for HBCU week.
Pastor Perkins.
I'm the brand ambassador for HBCU.
Well, get a suit made.
Oh, by the way, it's clean.
Get a suit made.
Hold on,
get a suit made.
Hold on. As clean as I usually am, you know how many suits I actually have had made? A matter of fact, I can make a legitimate argument. I gave you lessons. You usually looking like Mr. T.
Talking about boxing trainers coming on looking like Sonny Liston in a suit.
All right, let's bring it back. Stephen A., who's winning tonight?
Miami.
Okay.
Listen, I said this before. I thought this series would go seven games. I recognize the fact that it's still possible it could go seven games, but I think there's blood in the water. I think Miami is rolling, and I think that when you see Tyler Hero come out and play the way that he has played, he played last game, I think that's a big thing. I think Jimmy Butler is due one monster game like Tyler Hero had in game four. And if there was a time when Boston, I believe, was going to push this series to seven games, it was obviously game four. When I saw them after game three, I still picked them to win game four. I know that, I picked Miami to win this series from the beginning, and I never jumped off that. But I did think that Boston could potentially win game four because their backs were against the wall. There was a level of urgency, and Miami was still finding their way. But I'm looking at Boston play against the zone, and Eric Spoelstra's throwing a zone out there. Now, Jason Tatum had 28 in the second half, all 28 of his points in the second half, okay? Marcus Smart suddenly looked normal. Kemba has looked normal this entire series. And Jaylen Brown, even though he's getting points, his shooting percentage ain't necessarily what you'd like it to be, even though it's not awful. I just think that Miami right now, I think the nail gets put in the coffin tonight.
Well, I want to say something, and when I'm done, I'd love to hear from Perk why teams, as you brought up, Stephen A., in these playoffs, NBA teams are suddenly so bothered by zone defenses. I mean, I've never seen anything like this, the way it just discombobulates everybody. And this goes back to even last year. But I want to talk about Kemba Walker. You brought up Kemba Walker. I want to talk about Kemba Walker. I said when the Celtics acquired Kemba that this is the best approximation of Kyrie you could possibly get. He's not as good as Kyrie quite, but if you're looking for that kind of player, it's Kemba. And unlike Kyrie, he's good in the locker room, right? But in a way, he's the anti-Kyrie. Kyrie may not have a great effect on team chemistry, but if it's late in a critical game, Kyrie is that dude you want. He's a killer. He's a killer. Kemba Walker may be good in the locker room, may be good for chemistry, but he has not been able to elevate him or his team against the Miami Heat. And I don't believe he's going to go out that way. I love Kemba as a player. I just think he is going to, of course, he needs help on defense. He's tiny compared to these guys. But on offense, he has not been anything special. I expect one special game out of Kemba Walker. I think he's going to rise to the occasion. And so I like the Celtics to extend the series.
All right. Mark?
Well, I think that is over with tonight. I think the Miami Heat are going to close this out. And here's why. Yes, Tyler Hero is balling. Yes, Bam is doing his thing. But Eric Spoelstra is the best coach in the NBA right now. And his championship pedigree is kicking in right now. And he's running circles around Brad Stevens. Think about it. Between game 3 and game 4, he had about 4 days to prep. And he came out with a whole nother zone, a whole nother lineup. He benched Kendrick Nunn. He benched Kelly Olynyk. He went small. He put adjustments. On the other hand, Brad Stevens, what are you doing for not putting these guys in position to be successful? You are not doing that at all. It's no ball movement. It's no player movement on the Celtic end. It's here, Jason Tatum, my turn. Here, Kemba Walker, my turn, basketball. Here, Jaylen Brown, it's your turn. You're asking these guys to go straight isolation ball against a zone defense that none of us has ever seen before. You're not putting these guys in position to be successful. How many lobs is Bam going to get in this series? Every night he's getting dunk after dunk. They're getting layup after layup, wide open three after wide open three. He still haven't stopped the one action where they do the pick with the dribble handoff and going Dragic or Tyler Hero is coming off of Bam, and either the lob is there or the layup is there. Like, when are you going to make these adjustments? Brad Stevens in game 3 played Enes Kanter. Enes Kanter came in and he played well. He didn't play a single minute in game 4. He went with Robert Williams. So I'm just confused about what is Brad doing over there right now and what is he going to do to put these guys in position to be successful on this basketball court, because right now Eric Spoelstra is coaching circles around him.
Well, I think the reason why, listen, I don't go that far, but I think that the reason why Eric Spoelstra is really, really looks good right now, because his decision to go the route of playing zone most of the game, it's not something that you see in the modern day era of NBA basketball to that degree. And I think that's what's throwing dudes off. You're usually manning up, somebody gets double teamed or whatever, but you don't see a straight up zone being played as much
used to it
as Brad Stevens has done. So they get used to it. My issue is that if you can get used to it well enough to come back in the second half, right, and make a game out of it after trailing most of the game, how come you can't be ready for it the next game and the game after that and the game after that? Or if you had a double-digit lead in the first 3 games, what the hell you lose it for? I mean, it wasn't like it wasn't going against the zone at that particular moment in time. And that's where it gets a bit tricky.
Well, this is, Kendrick, you're talking about he's getting coached circles around Brad Stevens. Spoelstra isn't. Spoelstra may be the best coach in the game. He's a great coach, championship pedigree. But first game was a one-possession win for Miami. Second game was a two-possession win for Miami. Celtics did not have Gordon Hayward in either game. Celtics get Gordon Hayward, win by 11, and then in the next game lose by a possession. So it's actually, especially with Hayward, but even without him, a pretty evenly matched series. Are you saying that the Celtics are much more talented than the Heat, and Spoelstra's making up for that? Because these have not been blowout-type games.
Max, what I'm saying is that when you come down, when it comes down to, you're making my point, because when it comes down to a possession by possession game, that falls in the hands of the coaches. Who are you going to put the ball? Whose hands are you going to put the ball in? What plays are you going to draw up for this person to get an easy basket? Jason Tatum had all those points that he had. Majority of those came off of isolation or maybe driving kick. It wasn't nothing that came out of a timeout and you drew, Brad Stevens drew up a hell of a play and we was like, wow, he got Jason Tatum going with an easy basket backdooring to the rim or something to that nature. So you're making my point. My point is that if it's a possession by possession game, my trust is in the Miami Heat and Eric Spoelstra.
All right. Well, it sounds like we've got a 2-1 vote that the series ends tonight, and the finals will go to Miami, and you'll have a pina colada in your living room.
What we do have to be careful about, though, is that Bam Adebayo will play.
Yes.
But I don't know if it was his wrist or his hand that he hurt in game four. He needs to be a threat offensively like he has been. If he's compromised, that could be a problem for them. But we'll see.
Hey, Molly Karam here, and thanks so much for listening to the First Take podcast. Vivid Seats wants to get you to the games you love this spring. Experience every pitch, assist, game-winning shot live and in person. And the best part, each transaction is a step toward a free 11th ticket with Vivid Seats rewards. Score unbeatable perks like free tickets, surprise seat upgrades, and annual birthday deals. As the official ticketing partner of ESPN, Vivid Seats is offering you $20 off your first $200 ticket purchase with code TAKE. That's code TAKE. Visit vividseats.com or download the app today. Vivid Seats, experience it live.
And look who it is, our good friend Tim Tebow, who we see every Friday.
With a collared shirt on.
Very crisp.
Tim, every single week you're here, there's new news.
I just had to step it up a little bit this week. It's a big week because SEC's coming back. So, you know, I had to step it up. Dress up a little bit.
Yeah, all right. The SEC's coming back. We also just found out there's some other big news coming out of the West. So let's talk about that. The Pac-12 just announced that they will be playing a 7-game conference schedule starting in November and also a championship game. So here's Pac-12 Commissioner Larry Scott on that decision.
Some of our states, California and Oregon in particular, state and county public health authorities wouldn't give us approval to practice or to play. And that started changing once we had access to these daily tests. Really within the last week, that all came together. So we needed a lot of stars to align. And our campuses wanted to go about this in a very measured, careful way with health and safety in mind. And I'm happy we got to that point to still be able to participate in this football season, start men's and women's basketball, same time as every other league in the conference, as well as some of our other sports.
So here's what it's going to look like. The season will start November 6th, and each team will play the other five in their division, plus one interdivisional game. The conference championship game is set for December 18th. So, Tim, last week you were here. We talked about the Big Ten coming back. This week you're here. We're talking about the Pac-12 coming back. What do you think? Is this a good or a bad decision being made by the Pac-12?
I'm grateful for it. I love that we're giving these kids a safe option to live out their dream, and I'm excited about it. I think there's an uphill road for the best Pac-12 team to make the college football playoff, but I think there's at least a chance, and that's all any competitor athlete wants is a chance, and now we're giving these kids a chance. I'm excited about it. I think the 7 games is going to be very hard, especially when you look at the other conferences playing more games and having more depth. You look at the SEC and the top 13 toughest schedules are in the SEC. So it's going to be really tough to compare a Pac-12 team versus an SEC team. You're going to look to the Big 12 and Texas and Oklahoma, and then obviously Clemson and the ACC, but then Ohio State. So are we looking at another scenario where the Pac-12 is left out? It's going to be very hard to be able to evaluate this till the end. But I think it's going to take a Pac-12 team that's going to probably have to run the table and do it and really win in the eye test, because that's what I think the committee is going to have to evaluate this year, because that's the only thing you have to go on.
Tim Tebow, considering the times that we're living in, should we even care, or should we just be happy that we're getting football?
I think we should be happy. I think first of all, I'm happy for the kids. You know, I really do. I think my heart goes out to them when they're not able to live out their dream. I know how much that meant to me, and so I'm happy for the kids that they get this opportunity. So many of them work so hard to be able to do this and to be able to get to this point, so I'm excited for them. So I do think we should be grateful that we do have the Power Five that are playing, all these great athletes. It gives them a chance to go to their, live out their next dream, which is go to the NFL, and also gives them a chance to compete this year and really make a mark. And I think that's something that's exciting for me to watch. And I think it'll be more exciting to see their joy on the field when their season starts.
Tim, I like this decision by the Pac-12 because originally when they made a decision, there weren't antigen tests so readily available as they are now, even if they're not more accurate or as accurate as the other tests. At least they, if you get a positive, you can follow up and find out. And since all the other conferences are coming back, why not give it a shot if you think you can do it safely? I even like the November date because if things get shut down again, then you never have to even start and put anyone in harm's way. But do you think that there will be, like, what do you think the national title game, are we getting there? Is there, like, there have been COVID cases on campuses. Do you think we'll even get there?
That's a huge question, Max. It's a tough question to answer. I think because there are so many credible doctors and people that are working on this, that I think we have a good chance. But it's such a tough question to answer. You know, I think it takes a lot of student athletes to be responsible, to step up and do the right things, and social distancing, wearing a mask, washing your hands, not going to the wrong places, not being around groups, really stepping up and being responsible. And, you know, I've had the opportunity to talk to different teams and speak into them and you know, I've encouraged them. I said, you know, if you want to really have the opportunity to win a championship, then also you need to do things that other teams haven't had to do. That means when you're off the field, you need to be off. You need to step up. You need to be responsible. You need to do all these other things because if not, you're hurting your brother. And if you really care about your brother, then you're going to do the right things for yourself, for him, to give your team a shot at winning a championship and all of you the chance to live out your dreams. And so I think that is just so much, it's so much bigger this year. You always need to be your brother's keeper, but especially this year, if you want the chance to compete for a championship and to win it.
Tim Tebow, whether it's before, obviously, the pandemic stalled everything, or even now that things have been stalled, but we're about to see more college football, particularly in the SEC. Who do you think is the best team in the nation? Let me go to the football field. Who's the best team in the nation as far as Tim Tebow's concerned?
I think if you look at 1-2, I would go with Clemson and Alabama. I think Clemson, their depth, Trevor Lawrence, Travis Etienne, the culture that Dabo has created, I really believe in culture. And he has a culture that is thriving. His players love it. They believe in it. They follow him. They fight so hard. You know, they BYOG, you know, bring your own guts. I love it. And then I think you look at Alabama, I think they're going to have an improved defense. Their middle linebacker is coming back. I think Mac Jones, everyone wants to say, well, he's not Tua. No, he's not Tua, but he's pretty dang good. I think he has a chance to be one of the best quarterbacks in the SEC. They have maybe the best offensive line in the country, a big-time, maybe first-round draft pick as a running back, and two receivers that can go get it. So I think they're 1-2. And, you know, a lot of people are saying, oh, shoot, I don't want to see him play again. I can't wait to see them play again if they do. I love it. It's been one of the best rivalries in college football. You know what? If we get to see them play again, then I love it. And someone else needs to step up and knock them off before we put them on the throne.
Tim, I love moments like this where, like, something happens and people don't even really notice it. They just kind of accept it. But the world view of a sport has changed. You just said Clemson, Alabama, 1-2. And my first thought was, what else is new? Whoa, whoa, whoa. Put on the brake. Someone other than Alabama now, when you head into the season, is considered the one. That's like actually a tectonic shift in college football, is it not? Do you think that this is now the Clemson era? Because it was unquestionably, until pretty recently, about Alabama every preseason. Has something changed?
Well, I think it's pretty hard to say it's just the Clemson era because Alabama is doing some pretty good work the last few years. And yes, they've lost a couple of times to Clemson, but you still have to say Alabama is up there right with Clemson in competing right now. And I also want to throw out another team. Ohio State is for real. I think they have a chip on their shoulder. I think they're a little bit bitter of everything they've had to go through. And I think Justin Fields wants to make a mark and leave a legacy this year. And they're also definitely a team to watch.
All right. Well, the Pac-12, the latest conference to announce they are coming back for football this fall. Tim, thank you so much, as always. You're great. We appreciate you.
Appreciate you guys. Thank you.
Hey, Molly Karam here, and thanks so much for listening to the First Take podcast. We all know breakfast is part of your day, but sometimes when you're traveling for business, you end up staying at a hotel that doesn't offer any, and you know what happens. You grab a cup of coffee, you skip the meal entirely. We've all been there. But if you book a room at La Quinta by Wyndham, you can enjoy their free Bright Side breakfast featuring delicious baked goods, fruit, eggs, yogurt, even waffles. And really, who doesn't want to start their day with a fresh hot waffle? Come on. Tonight, La Quinta, tomorrow, you shine. Book direct at LQ.com. Okay, well, speaking of the NBA, the Sixers continue their search for a head coach, and one name being thrown around is former Rockets coach Mike D'Antoni, since he resigned from Houston after their postseason exit. According to NBC Sports, the belief is his hire could help to lure James Harden to the city of brotherly love. Now, Kendrick Perkins back here with us. And Stephen A., you're the one with all the ties to Philly. You got the inside scoop. And while they are maybe just rumors at this point, what would you think about Mike D'Antoni going to the Sixers?
I think that would be a disaster. I don't think that Mike D'Antoni should be the next head coach for the Philadelphia 76ers. And the primary reason is because I believe in Ben Simmons. I believe that Ben Simmons, outside of his shooting ability, he has literally every single other attribute. He's not scared. He doesn't fold in big moments. He can defend with the best of them. Obviously, his ball handling skills, his IQ is off the charts. And I think he's young enough where he has such tremendous, tremendous promise that with the right coach and somebody that could get on him and help improve his shooting, I think he can be a superstar in this league. Mike D'Antoni is the kind of person that'll bench you if you don't take a three-point shot. Okay? You're going to launch threes or you're going to shoot layups. Mm-hmm. You shoot a mid-range shot, Mike D'Antoni going to have a problem with you. You know what I mean? That's how he is. And so when I look at it from that perspective, along with the fact that defense is not prioritized, I don't think that's the place for Mike D'Antoni. Mike D'Antoni has been in Phoenix. He's been in New York. He's been in L.A. He's been in Houston. You hear rumors about him being in Indiana. He's never even been in an NBA Finals. That does not mean he can't coach, because we know he can. It does not mean he doesn't deserve to be a head coach, because he does, even though he keeps getting these opportunities. But to get the Philly job, considering how they're built, I'm not of that mindset, because I want to hold on to Ben Simmons and Joel Embiid, and I don't like the thought of D'Antoni coaching them.
First of all, doesn't Ty Lue have the job? Like, isn't Ty Lue heading to Philly? Isn't this what everyone's been hearing for weeks and weeks and weeks? And
Should have been Brooklyn, some would say.
Right. But the fact that hasn't happened, I don't know. I mean, it seems to me like Ty Lue's heading for Philly. We'll see whether that's right or wrong. But let's entertain D'Antoni to Philly for a second. On the one hand, just because he hasn't won with this kind of team doesn't mean he can't. You know, James Harden's a very different kind of player than Steve Nash was, and D'Antoni had a lot of success. No championships, but turned both times teams in the Western Conference into legitimate powerhouses with two very different kind of centerpiece players, right? Every great coach needs the extension of himself on the floor, and D'Antoni has used Steve Nash and now James Harden, two very different players, to do that. Who says he couldn't use Joel Embiid? But here's why he may not be able to. Embiid is a big, lumbering center. Maybe not by the standards of 20 years ago, but by the standards of today. I've never seen D'Antoni coach a team with a player like Embiid as a focal point on either side of the floor. And then Embiid doesn't like to run up and down the floor because he has a bad back, and maybe, and he came in with a bad knee and all that stuff. It seems like a bad fit, but there's even another, and by the way, the team doesn't have shooters, although I suppose it's easy enough to find complementary pieces that can shoot the ball. But there's another issue here. When has D'Antoni failed? D'Antoni failed in New York with Carmelo and in L.A. with Kobe, because in both instances, he couldn't get the superstar player to buy in, for that guy to be the extension of the coach on the floor. That wasn't Carmelo. It was just an ill-suited matchup, and it wasn't Kobe. And, in fact, the Lakers, people forget now, they had Steve Nash, Kobe Bryant, Pau Gasol, and Dwight Howard all on the same team. They were supposed to challenge the Heat that year, and they were imploding. And it wasn't until Kobe Bryant essentially staged a coup, like there was a mutiny on the team. Kobe said, no, I got this. We're going to play this way. They had a great record after that. That's when Kobe hurt his Achilles because he was playing himself 40 minutes a game, right? And D'Antoni couldn't stand up to that. Even Kobe had too much juice there. So when you can't get the signature player of the franchise to buy in, I don't think you can be successful. I don't see how D'Antoni would be able to get Embiid to do that given the style of play. Yeah. And I think it would be a failure the way it was in New York and L.A.
You know, it's crazy to me how we even talking about Mike D'Antoni when the Clippers were eliminated about 2 weeks ago, and we should have been hearing breaking news from Woj about Ty Lue going to the Clippers and it's signed, sealed, and delivered. The Clippers, I mean, the Philadelphia 76ers have been dysfunctional. The Houston Rockets, just a couple of weeks ago, they looked dysfunctional. So you mean to tell me that Mike D'Antoni is going to solve the problem with your two young stars when he couldn't get it together with two former MVPs still in their prime and Russell Westbrook and James Harden? Ty Lue is the guy for the job, period, point blank. I'm not being biased because Ty Lue is a brother of mine or I played for him.
Listen, I
think Ty Lue is heading to Philly. I believe.
Listen, I hope that he does. I'd rather him be there than with David Griffin in New Orleans because I think that New Orleans has a lot of work to do. I think Philadelphia, with the right coach, can contend for the title immediately. And so Ty Lue has a record as a championship coach. I think he deserves the opportunity. Plus, I know that he won't hesitate to hold dudes accountable. You literally have situations, and I hate talking about D'Antoni like this because I think he is a good coach and he is innovative offensively. Even though they were the best defensive team in a bubble at one point, the bottom line is that he wasn't the one that prioritizes defense. Elston Turner was doing that.
Always had a D coordinator.
And that's not to say other coaches don't do that. All I'm saying is it's not a priority. During halftimes, he's not known for making adjustments. D'Antoni lets you know he's very transparent. This is what we're going to do. Here's how we're going to do it. Figure out a way to stop us. And come playoff time, somebody always figures out a way to stop them, which is why he's been so many different places.
And Perk is back with us if you want to finish your thoughts, Perk.
Yeah, I mean,
all right.
Greatest championships of all time and was able to manage Kevin Love, LeBron James, and Kyrie Irving. And went comeback 3-1 down to 73-9 Golden State Warriors team. He would be the perfect fit for Ben Simmons and Joel Embiid. Not Mike D'Antoni. Come on, Elton Brand, get it together. Ty Lue is the guy for the job.
Yeah, I don't think it's an
Elton Brand decision per se. I know he has a say, but obviously from Josh Harris on down, Scott O'Neill and others, I think it's going to be a ruling by committee. I sincerely hope, though, they understand somebody's got to get Ben Simmons to shoot the ball more and not be fearful of it and go about the business of doing everything he can to be the great player we all know he can be. And somebody's going to have to hold Joel Embiid accountable as well because other than the Greek Freak, nobody in the Eastern Conference should be able to mess with Joel
Embiid. Who's going to get the job in Philly? I predict it's Ty Lue.
I hope so, too. I'm going to go with that prediction, but I can tell you one person will not make that call. Yes, KP.
But Stephen A., look, I know we keep saying that Ben Simmons has to shoot the ball, but what if he's just a player that's never going to be a shooter or never shoot the ball? He still could get put in position to be successful, and that's what Ty Lue has a great – he's great at. He's great at putting guys in those positions. Like Ben Simmons, we might just be seeing who he is for the rest of his career. That's why you have to put someone in place that is going to maximize his ability and put both of these guys together and make this work because both of these guys are young. Young studs and young future superstars in today's game.
I think the reason everyone wants Ben Simmons to shoot, other than the obvious thing it adds a dimension, is Ben Simmons kind of a poor man LeBron James. I mean, like, his court vision and defensively, he's already in. I thought he was the best player in the league. And we've seen what Ty Lue can do with that or what any team can do with that. That's what's really missing from Ben Simmons' game.
Here's what I'm trying to say, guys. Kendrick, just chime in here after I say this. Once upon a time when we saw professional athletes, they were moonlighting as athletes. They had regular jobs. I'm sorry, in today's day and age, you're getting paid millions. What the hell are you doing with your day that you can't improve your jump shot? That you can't improve your game? I don't want to hear, well, maybe he just doesn't do that. Learn, damn it. In today's day and age, when you have the ball in your hands, I don't care whether you're 6'1", 6 feet, 6'9", 6'10". If you have the ball in your hands in today's NBA.
He's not selling insurance in the offseason.
And you are no threat. You are no threat from the perimeter. It drastically inhibits your ability and your team's ability to succeed. What are you doing with your game that you can't? We saw MJ improve his J. We saw LeBron improve his J. We saw Kobe improve his J.
Rondo.
We saw D-Wade improve his J. Hell, we've seen Rondo improve his J. What is stopping anybody?
Jason
what are you
Kidd?
Doing with your time that you can't improve your J?
Jason Kidd, you know, remember? No, Jason Kidd, no J, but it didn't wind up that way. The bottom line is not even that he hits them so much. He has to at least take the shot. No coach has been able to get Ben Simmons to even take the shot.
So all this being said, though, if D'Antoni, you know, it's just a rumor at this point, but if he were to go to the Sixers and did bring James Harden along, would he fit into the Sixers lineup, you think?
It's an island of misfit toys. I don't understand that fit at all.
No, neither do I. Neither do I.
Perk, you feel the same
either.
Thing?
Okay. But, Stephen.
Go ahead. Go ahead, KP.
I do. But, Stephen A., to your point, shooting is a skill set. You know, certain guys, they're just shooters. You got to go back to Ben Simmons' LSU days. He was a power forward. You heard his coaches talk about it. They put him at the power forward because that's where he thrived the best. He might not be a perimeter-type guy. Just because he's able to push the ball and make plays for others don't make him a point guard, or it don't make him a shooting guard or a small forward. He might be a power forward that just can handle the rock and make decisions for others. And that's why I'm
saying. Stephen A. is right on this.
You can work on your jumper all day long, but having a jump shot, that is a skill set.
Giannis,
to be able to shoot
Rondo,
the ball.
Jason Kidd, and Magic Johnson in the beginning. It's not even about being a great shooter. It's about a guy who's at least willing to take
practice.
A shot.
Let me say this. Kendrick Perkins, are you ready for this? Could you put me up on the split screen with Kendrick Perkins? Kendrick Perkins, I'm getting ready to drop the mic on you right now. Are you listening to what I'm about to say? Irvin Magic Johnson completely. Irvin Magic Johnson completely agrees with me on this issue.
All right.
Raved about how he raved about how he showed you love a few weeks ago, and you deserved it. And you spoke about him in deified terms.
I mean, the
godlike basketball figure that Irvin Magic Johnson is. I just want you to know that Irvin Magic Johnson has co-signed when I have said on numerous occasions in the past, what the hell are you doing with your day that you cannot improve your jump shot? Nobody's asking him to be Steph Curry. Nobody's asking him to be something like that. But damn, you should be able to shoot a little bit and at least attempt shots. That's the bottom line, Kendrick Perkins. And Magic Johnson agrees with me. To that, you say what?
Well, Stephen A., Everybody ain't able to shoot that broke jumper like you. Everybody don't have your confidence just because you.
It's true. That is true.
Good day.
Stephen A. First, you better go get Larry Bird to co-sign what you say.
All right. Well, it seems like not only ability, but also confidence an issue in Ben Simmons' game there
Kendrick's
as far
just
as
grumpy.
Shooting goes.
Kendrick's just grumpy. When I told him Magic Johnson agreed with me, did you see his face? You don't see Kendrick Perkins do that, though. He's usually staring in the camera like this. But when I said Magic Johnson, he just leaned away. You know what I'm saying?
Well, there you go. You got your mic
drop. It touched him a little bit.
That's
right
my
there.
He'll come back.
Kendrick Perkins ain't going to come back to that. He ain't no better.
Okay, well, we do have to drop the conversation there. But
on his face.
Kendrick, thank you so much. I know we're all going to keep our eyes closed.
All right, big boy.
See who the next head coach of the Sixers will be. Ty Lue, definitely the favorite at this desk.
Enjoy all your favorite sports like never before at BetMGM. Sign up using code FIRSTTAKE and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. When you register with BetMGM, you'll get instant access to a variety of parlay selection features, live betting options, and the best daily promotions in the business. And with BetMGM at your fingertips, every play and every game matter more than ever. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to gamble responsibly. See BetMGM.com for terms. This U.S. promotional offer not available in D.C., Mississippi, North Carolina, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369 for New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. For Massachusetts, 1-800-327-5050. For Iowa, 1-800-BETS-OFF. For Puerto Rico, 1-800-981-0023. For West Virginia, visit 1-800-GAMBLER.net. First bet offer for new customers only. Subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards are non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire in 7 days in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel.
It's a battle of two former Super Bowl MVPs on Sunday night when Drew Brees and the Saints take on that bad man Aaron Rodgers and the Green Bay Packers in New Orleans. The Saints are coming off a disappointing double-digit loss to the Raiders, not helped by the fact that Drew Brees averaged his fewest yards per attempt this season since joining the Saints. Okay, before we get to that, Stephen A., there's something you wanted to touch on about 76ers.
What I want to say, are you ready for this, Max? Don't fall out your seat. When we were talking about the Sixers and the coach, you know what name I'm going to throw in the hat? How about Larry Brown? Remember years ago when Jerry West hired Hubie Brown? And we were like, Hubie? And people were going off like, this guy, his time has passed. And I was like, Hubie Brown forgot more basketball than most people know. Well, there's one other person that qualifies. That's Larry Brown, still beloved in Philadelphia, guided the 76ers to an NBA Finals appearance, is about teaching. Excuse me, Larry Brown back in the NBA to teach dudes how to play? It wouldn't bother me one bit. Ain't going to happen. I doubt it. But if what Larry about Brown, Larry Brown?
If Larry Brown coaches in the NBA, I need it to see him coach Chris Paul's team. Chris Paul is like the perfect Larry Brown point guard. I want to see that happen.
But think about Larry Brown and what he could do with a Ben Simmons. He'd have Ben Simmons on the perimeter handling the basketball, running the team. He'd have Joel Embiid behind on the block doing his thing. Yeah. And his defenses would be absolutely elite. We all know that about Larry Brown. How about Larry Brown?
All right, NBA, you heard
Philly.
It. Throw the name in the hat. Let's go.
That's right.
But let's go back to our subject we were about to approach. How much pressure is on Drew Brees in this game?
A little, because, you know, you got people like Max, you know, teaching us what the word ravine means. You understand what I'm saying? Maybe not a cliff, but a ravine.
You think it's a cliff, and when you get a little close, you see
get a little close,
a ravine.
You see it right there. Yeah. And at first it was about Tom Brady. Now Max, with his ageism, is now bringing up
I tried
Drew
it on
Brees.
LeBron. It didn't work.
You know what I'm saying? Tried it with LeBron. So,
He's
doing that, Drew Brees got to be mindful of that. He's got to be careful about that. He hasn't looked great. He says he's close to himself or whatever the case may be. I think the absence of a preseason has hurt him to some degree. Michael Thomas not being there last week clearly has hurt him. We don't know if he's going to be back this week. He may or may not. I think he's just sit out another week since that was a high ankle sprain. But I'm of the mindset that if Drew Brees has his weapons, I'm not worried about him. But in the same breath, the Las Vegas Raiders, man. Listen, you can say what you want. I know they're playing the Packers this week, but I'm just saying, I was just thinking about the Raiders in terms of Derek Carr and Waller and those boys. It would be nice to see Drew Brees get back to having an intermediary target. We'll see what transpires. But I'm of the mindset that Drew Brees is Drew Brees. He ain't under so much. It's like if he has a bad game, Max will be talking about it. I'll just say he had a bad game.
What about two straight bad games?
I'm just saying. This would be because last week
wasn't that good. He's had two straight bad games.
Well, again, I'm not going to trip yet because there was no preseason. If there were a preseason and he started off this way, I would be worried. Look, but the fact that there was no preseason, I'm not gonna overreact.
I'm not ringing the alarm yet, but if he has another bad game, I got my finger on the button. You know, like, this dude is old. Tom Brady being 43 has disguised what old means. 41 is ancient for a quarterback. And I look at his yards per attempt, way down.
Yeah.
Way down. And talk about a cliff. Like, I saw Warren Moon, I think it was on TMZ yesterday or 2 days ago, talking about, because Warren Moon was the one dude who defied the cliff prediction. When I said no quarterback had ever played past 41, and still Warren Moon had. And he was the one exception until Tom Brady. And he talked about what Drew Brees needs to do. You need to pace yourself, because as the season wears on, you wear out. You look at Drew Brees at the end of the last couple seasons, he wasn't there when they needed him to be. He was outplayed by the other quarterback, and he looked old. Now we're seeing that carry over to the beginning of the season. Maybe it's no preseason. Maybe it's because Michael Thomas wasn't playing. The Saints offense does not look dynamic. Drew Brees was contemplating retirement in the offseason, and then he does this. Yeah, it's a big deal. Drew Brees' performance in week three is a big deal.
Again, I'm not going to say it's a big deal because it's week three and there was no preseason. And there was no Michael Thomas last week. If there was Michael Thomas and Emmanuel Sanders and Alvin Kamara and there were preseason games and you started out this way, that would be different. But I think what we're seeing is the ill effects of not having that preseason available to you. Now, one would think that shouldn't be the case because most of the team remained intact. Sean Payton is still calling plays. What's the damn problem? This should be better. But the flip side to it, again, is it might affect people. There's been a lot of distractions this offseason. People are not knowing whether or not a football season is going to happen. Questions as to whether or not you're going to do it. Also, not feeding off that adrenaline that the crowd provides by being in attendance and really, really getting you psyched and hyped to perform. It is a challenge.
But he's 41. More so in football.
But think about this for a second, Max. Incomplete pass, huddle. Running play, huddle. Bomb, huddle. Now it kicks off the special team. Now the defense gets more. Basketball, you're going up and down. You can get caught up and enthralled in the action that's taking place. Football, there's too much time where you got space. And when there's an empty stadium and stuff like that, it's like, it might be a little bit harder to get.
If you hear hoofbeats in North America, don't rule out zebras, but think horses first. This brother's 41 years old, and he's looking like
it. What did he just say?
I have no idea. Okay. But he's Max.
Look, we'll see how Breeze plays on Sunday, and then maybe next week there'll be a different conversation or maybe the same conversation to be had. But let's talk about the Browns. We have seen them have one of the best running back duos in the league this year between Kareem Hunt and Nick Chubb, Odell Beckham Jr. Meanwhile, he's not stressing about his lack of production so far this season. He went as far to say, for me, one of my biggest growths has come in acceptance in a sense. And for me, knowing it's probably not going to be that kind of season with huge numbers. Like I always say, my goal is always going to be my goal. And I don't feel like I'm ever going to fall short of it. Like I said, learning and acceptance. So you set new goals. Mm-hmm. Okay, so Odell obviously in a much different position than he has been in past years. Now he's trying to accept this. So maybe not going to work out with the Browns. So if it doesn't, because of what's transpiring now, where do you see him fitting in best?
I think the best fit overall between what the team needs, what he's ready for in his career. He sounds more mature now, 27 years old, been around the block a couple times, been on two different teams, got a big contract already, got his money, been traded. I think it's the New England Patriots, and I'm loath to say it because, do I hate the Patriots. But they are missing a receiver, like a real difference maker on offense at the receiver position. And Cam is missing it, and Cam has looked fantastic. And Belichick, likes Odell. That's why he wanted him. If you put Odell in that situation, not just with the quarterback, but with the coach, with Bill Belichick, they become immediate Super Bowl contenders.
But they're not. That's not the case. And getting back to the basketball part, you don't have to hire Larry Brown as your head coach if you don't want to. You should have him as a part of your basketball department instead of relying on a bunch of analytics dudes who never played.
How about both? Why is it one or the other?
How about both? Somebody that's going to be in the air, a basketball mind in the air, one of them owners. That's number one. Number two, Odell Beckham Jr. Let's get back to this and say it plain. Odell Beckham Jr., which team is a better fit for him? Anybody with a quarterback, because he don't have one right now in Baker Mayfield. He has somebody learning to be a quarterback. He has somebody that has skill but needs to grow and mature into that point. But in the end, all it comes down to is that Odell Beckham Jr. is being hindered by Baker Mayfield. A better quarterback, he would not be having these problems.
Do you believe him when he says he's accepting of his role that he has to
take
on this season?
For now, because he's stuck there for this year. Let's see what he says.
If you gave Aaron Rodgers Odell and put him on the team with Devontae Adams, they're coming out of the NFC, they're better than the Seahawks. If you put him on the Patriots, they'll challenge the Chiefs.
Yep.
He's a difference maker.
Well, you probably heard Odell Beckham's comments about how he really had this new sense of acceptance after watching Michael Jordan in The Last Dance.
Oh, well. It is what it is. Odell Beckham Jr. is in Cleveland. They're not going anywhere this year.
Nope, they're not.
Right.
That's for sure.
I got it. Can I switch gears for a second?
Absolutely.
I want to take a moment. Once again, Molly Karam, promoting HBCU Week. Max, you've been helping me since last year. Thank you so much. Appreciate your contribution. Obviously, appreciate you today. Want to thank ESPN. Want to thank Walt Disney. Again, remember, people don't realize this. I don't own these damn airwaves. I'm allowed to do this. I'm allowed to promote HBCU Week. I didn't bring the show to Delaware State last year. Dave Roberts and Norby Williamson and Connor Shell and Jimmy Pitaro did that. So I just want to take a moment to extend my heartfelt gratitude to the great producers here, Antoine Lewis, James Dunn, Brian Bork, Jeff Anderson, everybody, Dominique Collins, Max and Molly, again, you. Just want to thank everybody. HBCUweek.org. Over 3,500 people have already registered. We're hoping to exceed the 4+ million in scholarships we gave out last year, and I think we're en route to doing that. I just want to say thank all of y'all and ESPN and Walt Disney.
Is there a number in mind that they think they might hit this year?
I don't know, but I know it's going to be more than 4 million.
I think that's...
Records are made to be broken.
Always meant to be broken.
HBCU.org.
That's right.
Absolutely.
Well, thank you. HBCUweek.org.
HBCUweek.org.
All right, and hopefully next year everything's back in person like it has been in the past.
I want to go to Columbia.
So much. Thanks for being with
us. I want to do a show at Columbia.
Next week, SportsCenter's next.
That's right.